Okay, so good evening to all of you. Welcome, especially welcome those who have arrived today. Penny, welcome after a long drive and a little difficulty finding the place that we most of us had. So welcome to the group, and also welcome Rasangi, Rembilas. Thank you for coming. Welcome you all. Happy birthday, Rembilas, again. I'm thinking maybe we can begin with the short Mangalacharan. That it's not so much a usual Mangalacharan in our tradition, but it can very naturally be rendered as one. Now, we tried that one recently. We were in Glastonbury doing a program talking about love as its own reward, which is the invocation of the Sri Upanishad, which also appears in other Upanishads. It's not just exclusive to the Upanishad. I don't know if you know that mantra. Those who know can join, and those who do not can join. Without joining, still you can join. Okay? Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamiva Vashishyate. So basically, this mantra says everything is complete. The source is complete, whatever emanates from the source, from the divine, like this world is complete. So we are all complete. Everything is complete. We are just lacking awareness of the completion or the completeness of everything. So the whole idea of practice, spiritual practice, to become conscious of the wholeness of reality, of the divine, of the material world, of us. We are not souls broken in bits. Sometimes we may use the word brokenness, but that's more on a, it, if it is, it's on a more psychic, emotional level. But who we are not broken in our essence. We are a whole that comes from another whole, that comes from not. So this is a term also called holon in scientific philosophical circles. A holon means a whole within a whole, what exists within a whole. Like a cell unto itself is a whole, but a cell exists among other million cells in a whole called body, and the body is a whole existing in a bigger whole, which is planet Earth, which is another whole existing in a bigger whole, and so on and so forth. So we can speak in terms of a holarchy. I use the term in Evolution and Divine Love. Holarchy is like a system of holons, of holes within holes, holes with W, right? When we lose sight of our wholeness with W, we enter just with wholeness with H. Now we enter into a galaxy of holes with H. No? So we are trying to bring back wholeness. So maybe we can recite this mantra with, there's a very nice melody that I remember was recorded by Yamuna Devi in the famous Radha Krishna Temple album. If you know that one, we can sing that melody a few times all together. A cappella a few times, so we can enter into wholeness, space of wholeness, and we are sitting in circle trying to invoke the sense of wholeness, revolving around the sacred center, may the fire, feet of Gaur Nitai. So yeah, let's try to acknowledge the wholeness of everything, trying to enter that space before we open the space for any questions, sharings you may have. So for those who know the mantra, do not know the melody, well, I will sing it. Those who already know all of that can join immediately. Those who know nothing of that already know what the mantra is about, and the important thing is to be present with to what the mantra is saying, which is kind of the math of the infinite, which is the source is complete, whatever emanates from the source is complete, even if you how to say in English? Whether you are doing math and you are adding numbers or subtractions. If you subtract infinite from the infinite, still infinite remains infinite. No, so it's all whole, it's all complete. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya
पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादया 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 पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते।
So, after invoking a sense of wholeness and completeness and hopefully presence and awareness to the holistic nature of reality of which we are part, we open today's circle in the evening for any topics, any questions, quests, doubts, sharings, explorations you may like to venture into today. After our morning sharing on the sacred disappearance day that we are continuing to celebrate with Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, and why not also Saint Francis Day today, which we are the appearance day of Saint Francis of Assisi. Today I was reading a few words by Srila Prabhupada where someone was quoting to him Bhagavad Gita, Jvam Pashyati Sarvatra Sarvam Chamai Pashyati, like description of the enlightened soul who sees God in everything and everything in God. And someone say, oh, Saint Francis of Assisi, he will used to relate to worms and birds and trees like family. See, oh, that's what we are talking about. That's perfection. That's perfection. So yeah, it's all one family. Again, let's not make unnecessary boundaries in the world of saints, right? So you're welcome to bring anything you may like to bring today, whatever feels relevant to you today. Jamuna, raise your hand, then Karuneshwari. Akturasa, you were just taking the pen.
I'm just taking them.
Taking the pen is fine. Fire enough. Then Sam, wow, okay, let's go. Okay.
It's done. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. We never know, right? Jamuna's sharing may be enough for us to, as we say in the morning, to enter the tavern once again and get lost in the drunkenness of the wine of divine love, right? I forgot to say today in the morning that one of the names of Bhagavan, the Vishnu Sahasranam, the 1,000 names of God, is Dripta, which means drunk.
You know, so much talking about drinking, we had wine delivered. Tesco delivered.
We had wine delivered.
But accident, I mean, not accident, Tesco, it was a mistaken order.
But
they brought wine.
Really?
Bottles of wine at Tesco.
Wow.
It was
we gave them back to the guy. And, you know, this is a different tavern.
They overheard the conversation so much, like, oh, wine, wine. Okay, there seemed to be in need of one. But you talked about that in the morning all day. Here's the wine. God incidents, not coincidence.
Yeah.
It was Krishna dressed as a wine deliverer. Who knows what wine that was? So, come on.
So we talk so much about, or it's mentioned and talked about, Radharani's love, and serving Srimati Radharani is the highest because of her love for Krishna and how she is who she is. But in dealing with so much of, so talking personally in regards to this question, dealing with so much of my own stuff, it can feel unrelatable. It can feel more than far away, like just untangible, and a language that I can't understand. I can't even necessarily always appreciate, being very vulnerable and honest here. So how to bridge the gap? Is there, yeah, there we go.
May I ask something in return before trying to say something? So why it feels unreachable? What's that that feels or unrelatable
It feels
in
like,
your situation? Because you are speaking for yourself,
yeah,
though I know
because
it's not only you, but the here is Jamuna talking, so.
this is Jamuna talking. So, I'm dealing with stuff that comes up, brokenness, unhealthiness, my own murky pond of water, to then hearing about her divine love, her manjaris, the service, the mood. There, it just feels like, I feel like I can't relate to that. I feel, in all honesty, I feel like I could relate more to Krishna because he's supreme. If I want to just go on the majesty side of God, he's supreme. And then I feel him as a friend. But that unconditional, intense love that she has, I find very hard to relate to. And I know that I'm most probably, I'm going to do the old, I'm going to get struck down by lightning thing for saying this, but that's my vulnerable question of, I find it very hard to relate to that sweetness. Yes.
Thank you.
Did I explain, or did I just go around in circles?
A little bit of both.
No.
No, I'm joking. Thank you. Thank you for your question. And of course, again, you are not alone, I'm sure, in that. I don't want to talk for anyone else, but sometimes our tradition has a very sophisticated, refined, detailed, esoteric, deeply theological portrayal of reality and the ultimate reality. And that's today in the morning, we touched very briefly upon some aspects of Sri Radha's love and dedication and mood. And I try to make that clear. We may be talking about some of the things that we are talking, even in one single lecture, one single sharing, one may be talking about things that for some of us, some of those things are, okay, this belongs to the long-term goal department. That other thing that was said the 1 5 minutes after that belongs to the middle-term goal department. And that other thing that is being said belongs to the short-term goal department. And that other thing that is being said belongs to the immediate goal department. I know I can and I should be doing that, so to say. So, and it's okay. It's not that, of course, I will say it in proportion, in terms of proportion, big part of what we should hear is has to be relatable to where we are, because if it's just, okay, my short-term goal is 1% of the lecture and 99% is the long-term goal in 3 lifetimes, it may be a little bit like unrelatable, no? So, or as I like to say or do, even when we talk about ideals that belong to the long-term goal, how can we make them relatable to our current situation? Not to downgrade, you say, the highest, but to show because it's the highest has the capacity of extending itself to the lowest, so to say, and give us some insight, some point of entry, some connection, even where we are. So as we will say in our tradition, Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the highest of the highest. But at the same time, because he's the highest of the highest, it extends himself to the lowest of the lowest. So it's not that because something is the highest thing, it's the highest thing and it's over there and I'm over here. There's no bridge in between. And of course, if Mahaprabhu is considered the highest of the highest, even above Krishna, quote unquote above, quote unquote Krishna, because Mahaprabhu is Krishna. But is Krishna a very unprecedented, momentous chapter? No? So it's still Krishna. But why Mahaprabhu is highlighted in that special way? Because it's Krishna imbued in the mode of Sri Radha. No? So for me, it's interesting when you mentioned that you can. It's my now come my opinion here comes my, that you cannot relate that much to Sri Radha as you can relate to Krishna, while in one sense, and again, we don't want here to say, okay, this she is more compassionate than him, she's less compassionate than her. I mean, it's complex to put all this into words because she and he and her are, in one sense, the same reality, expressed expressed in terms of relationship. Is the one indivisible, non-dual, absolute, taking two forms for the sake of relationality. So, how much we can again say he's like this and she not is not like that. We cannot separate Radha and Krishna. And Sri Radha is known as Maid of Mercy. I mean, there are very similar names to both that, like Krishna is known as Kripa Moy. No, he's Kripa Moy. He Maya means his own being is made of Kripa. And Sri Radha is known as Kripa Mayi. So it's a female. So you have many names of Krishna and you have the exact same name for Radha in the female. Like implying it's not that one has something and the other is like entirely two separate and unrelated people. So as Krishna is Karuna Sindhu, as Krishna is an ocean of mercy, Sri Radha is an ocean of mercy as well. I look for a beautiful verse from Radha Rasa Sudanidhi. Let's go there for a moment to the highest of the highest. Radha Rasa Sudanidhi. A pure ocean of rasa for Sri Radha by Prabodhananda Saraswati. This is a nice verse. I like it a lot. He uses the word Sindhu a lot. I just say, Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu. We know that verse. Krishna is an ocean of mercy. And Prabodhananda Saraswati in his Divine Bias to Radha. He composes whole verse where he used the word Sindhu like 8 times, all for Sri Radha in different ways. He say, Vaidakya Sindhur, Anuraga, Rasayaka Sindhur, Vatsalya Sindhur, Atisandra Kripaika Sindhur, Lavanya Sindhur, Amrichavi Rupa, Amrita, sorry, Lavanya Sindhur, Amritachavi Rupa Sindhu, Shiradikas Puratume, Hridikeli Sindhu, 7 times. Krishna has one Sindhu, she has seven Sindhus. Again, seven oceans, and there's a whole explanation. I won't go into the details of there are seven oceans mentioned in the scripture, but basically the prayer goes, Well will Sri Radha, who is an ocean of cleverness, an ocean of divine attachment, an ocean of motherly affection, Vatsalya, an ocean of very deep compassion, Kripa, an ocean of elegance, a nectar ocean of glistening transcendental forms, and an ocean of play, be manifest in my heart. So she's oceanic, as you can see. Sindhu, Sindhu is the word. So the second line says, Vatsalya Sindhur Atisandra Kripaika Sindhur. So she's an ocean of Vatsalya, which means, in this case, motherly affection. Now maybe we can ask ourselves, do I relate to Radha as a mother, as a divine mother, a sacred mother? That's available. If you don't choose to do that, that's your choice, of course, but that's legal, right? Sometimes we will think of Krishna as father. Okay, why not think Radha as the divine mother? Or someone say, okay, Krishna is my friend. Well, Radha can be your friend as well. Krishna is your Sakha, Radha is your Sakhi. But sometimes we do not explore creatively those possibilities. And sometimes, and I'm not talking to you now, I'm just talking in general, but I'm just opening the door for some of these explorations. Because, I mean, I'm just touching one verse here, but there are many verses where it is, we are invited to, how to say, to open ourselves to a relationship to the divine feminine. Because you ultimately rather represents the divine feminine. And many times, consciously or unconsciously, many, and I've heard that in many devotees, male-bodied and female-bodied, so to say, that somehow they have not a very functional relationship with the feminine. With the feminine as an archetype in general. So therefore, Radha is kind of out of the picture. Krishna is, I'm not talking about everyone, of course. I'm just touching about some cases. So I think that as part of our own integration of our own femininity, so to say, I mean, I'm not saying just worship of Sri Radha is to be reduced to health integration of my feminine side, but many times because that's not health properly integrated, we kind of find that side of the divine not so relatable because we don't know what to do with the feminine. It's like bewildering, intriguing, mysterious, unknown, fits unknown in our own body and psyche and world, inner world. Here, someone tells it the goddess, and it's like, what's that? Krishna seems more familiar, the masculine god. And even we may project some patriarchal notions onto poor Krishna. Right. Because Krishna is very feminine in his own way, very vulnerable and so on, right? So many, my point with all this is that many times our lack of connection and relatability with the idea of Sri Radha is not necessarily because that's so high and we are so far, because but many times there are other elements at play that we may not be aware of, that we may even need to integrate and heal on a more relative level. In terms of healing, integrating the feminine in ourselves, in relationships, all that the feminine implies, and naturally the goddess starts to make sense. And not only starts to make sense, of course, but becomes more and more prominent, more and more necessary, more and more relatable. But again, which is my what is my present current relationship with the feminine? In so many ways. So those will be a few thoughts. And again, trying to speak about this in a relatable way, right? I'm not telling you like, okay, meditate in the morning, visualize yourself as a Manjari and you're whatever, doing this service for Radha. And if your husband asks you to cook breakfast, tell him that you are doing your Radha Dasyam, so he should mind his own business, and you have nothing to do. No, we're not saying anything of that, right? But so many times we need to start from a very basic point. Okay, where is my connection with the feminine in humans' psycho-emotional terms? Is there something that needs healing there, integration, acknowledgement, healthy embrace? Because all that may be getting in the way of giving a place of the goddess in my world, giving a place of the for the feminine in eternity, right? Because if we don't have a very healthy relationship with the feminine here, unconsciously we will not want to have anything to do with the feminine in eternity, right? The feminine is something unresolved, mysterious, unknown for me here, and I don't want to deal with that. What to speak of? Okay, let's serve that forever. It's like, oof, it's too much to even think about that because in the immediate, I don't know what to do with it. So it's all connected. I know some devotees who have done this type of work also, keeping Sri Radha as the goddess and the feminine, but in that context, working on all that the feminine entails. Again, for biological woman, but for any of us. Because all of us have a feminine and a masculine side that need to be properly integrated into the dance of polarity. Radha and Krishna is these two polarities. You want to call it yin yang, you want to call it Radha and Krishna. I'm not reducing them to an abstract principle, but they represent this. So you want to say something, sir?
No, it's just that because I've heard so much wonderful stuff about Srimati Radharani, that sometimes it, when he was talking about, the whole meditation and imagining yourself as a Manjari and going to that, I've literally had that kind of imposed on me. So, which I find, for me personally, it would be too cheap because that's like, I need more than a telescope, So yeah, that's kind of what hearing sentimental speak about, I'm not explaining it properly.
It's
It's
coming.
like sentimental words without the qualification behind. It feels icky, it feels empty, it feels like ash, which then kind of makes an aversion in the heart of all this isn't.
So again, that's the thing is not we are not here forbidding any conversations about Sri Radha, but just encouraging addressing that reality in a relatable way. And what's relatable, what's realistic for each one will be different. For some people, contemplating their own internal identity of service in the service of Sri Radha can be a very bona fide path to that realm, but for others, it may be different and it's okay. But we don't want to, how to say, go to one extreme nor the other. It's not to forbid any talk on that because, in the name of being too elevated, I mean, if we have to stop doing things that are too advanced, we have to cancel all our practice, basically. Stop chanting the Maha Mantra then, because it's too advanced. It's not different from Radha and Krishna. Who do you think you are to invoke Radha and Krishna so many times per day? If we play that game, we have to put a pause to all our sadhana. Stop reading Bhagavatam because it's too advanced. It's not different from Krishna. Stop worshipping the deity because it's too advanced. It's not different from Krishna. Stop taking prasad because it's too advanced. It's not different from Krishna. It's Krishna's mercy. So no, that doesn't work like that. But as you say, we don't want to, at least, especially I will say for most of us who are very connected to a line related to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Sridhar Maharaj himself, they will be very cautious about talking cheaply about the deepest things. Not because we don't want to talk about that, because we want so badly to serve that we take proper care. But we have to be careful in that care not end up canceling everything altogether. How they say in English, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. So that can happen in so many ways, so many times in the name of spirituality. So again, a safe place to be, as I always like to recall and remind myself, following the spirit of Srila Sridhar Maharaj, and once he will be giving his conversations, and one devotee wanted to, with a good heart, but ended up like trying to imitate Srila Sridhar Maharaj. You cannot imitate Srila Sridhar Maharaj if you are not Srila Sridhar Maharaj, basically. And if you are not imitating yourself. You are who you are. This body with good heart, but trying became inspired and then trying like to. And no, it was not working, of course. And then he asked another devotee, like, how it is that Srila Sridhar Maharaj can always be speaking high topics all the time, in sitting in formal conversation, just like pouring one. And the other devotee told him, actually, Srila Sridhar Maharaj generally does not speak about higher topics. He could, but generally, considering the adhikara of the audience, he generally speaks about the most basic topics in the deepest possible way. So that's an interesting approach to all this, no? Because if we are not embracing that discipline, we may want to go to the highest topics and talk about them in the shallowest possible way. And that's one of the greatest disservice, the greatest rasa vasa, something that creates vibhatsa rasa in the great personalities. Vibhatsa rasa means the flavor of disgust. Like, oof. No? So because we want to honor that higher reality, we will go to the basics in the deepest possible way. And if we do that with utter sincerity, Celestial Masters will say, we will be dragged by force to the higher quarters. No, it's not that we will try to enter ourselves like by force, like to ascend by our own strength. But we'll try to remain as deep as we can in the basics, in the foundations, and realize that, oh, those foundations, you can explore them without limit, actually. There's so much that can be said in such a depth about the basics. And by that exercise, he will say, you will be more and more called and attracted to properly honor those higher departments with taste, right? With sensibility. Because we don't want to, how to say, to invade the higher quarters and create a disturbance there. That's how Srila Samaras will put it in his own words, of course. We want to go there to serve. So if we dare to speak about it, if we dare to do anything in relation to that, has to be in a way that is blessed, so to say, with blessings and with proper permissions, so to say. So again, like I was saying today in the morning, someone told me recently, it was on a lecture I gave on Radhastami a few months ago, or last month, or no, I think, anyhow. But it was in Spanish. You may not recall that because probably you were not there. And at one point, I said, okay, any questions? And one question was like, well, Maharaj, we are Gaudiya Sampradaya, and the highest goal is to be a Kinkari of Sri Radha. No? And I already was like, okay. Now, Kinkari means like a female servant of Radha, no? Manjari. So all of our acharyas are serving in that mood. Oops, I was again like, because not everyone is Manjari, you know? Because again, we start to speak about the highest in very like, everyone is this, and this is the highest, and if you are not in this, you are low, you are wrong, you are out of the... And that's all Kanishta stuff thrown onto the Uttam platform. And that's like eating, I don't know, what? Mango with pasta. Don't try the cooks, they say. Don't try that one. You have been warned if you were planning that menu for tomorrow. Anyhow, so my point is, and then she said, like, so it's, I think it's important that we get to, and I'm not criticizing this person. I mean, it was from an innocent place that the question came, but so we want to get more and more familiar with. It came from a place also of she being in places where anything about Radharani is cancelled without any clarification or nuance, which is also not healthy. So she mentioned, like, okay, maybe we need to learn about at which time Radharani is taking lunch and what is she doing at this time, so we become more familiar with who she is. And I was thinking, oh, you can learn all those technical details. I can memorize the name of Radharani's Bina. I can memorize how the earrings she has, the color of sari according to the season. We can memorize all the be good boys and good girls, do our homework. And what's the name of the Bina? This Maharaj. This is the name. What's the color? But that doesn't mean we are contacting the person, having an experience of that reality and understanding the mood and the heart of that person. So, and again, if you under, for this is very important, our acharyas have recommended many times, you have to go to Radharani through Mahaprabhu. That's the safest way. Yata, the very same book I just read, Radharasa Sudhanidhi, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, Yatayata Gauda Padara Vindam Bindeta Bhaktim Krita Punya Rasi Tata Tata Sarpati Hritya Kashma Radha Padam Boja Sudhamburasi. The more you give yourself to the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya, the more you serve that reality, Gaur Lila, the more you immerse yourself into Gaur Lila, the more you emerge into the service of the feet of Radharani. That's how he makes that imaginary. The more you go deep into the service of Mahaprabhu, the more you find yourself serving at the feet of Radha. Because of, again, who is Mahaprabhu? It's Krishna trying to relish Radha Bhava. And again, we cannot speak about Mahaprabhu without speaking about Sri Radha, but we may be speaking about Radha without speaking about Mahaprabhu properly. And that can leave us in a, for some, in a really, how to say, disconcerting place. So Gaur Lila is very interesting because, again, it's God as a sadhaka, God as a practitioner, teaching the way, giving the example, and showing a clear sequence. Again, when some devotees come to me, like, hey, we have to speak about Radharani now in detail, full intimacy. That's not the sequence of the Bhagavatam. No? Bhagavatam doesn't even mention the name of Radharani directly. Of course, indirectly, we could say she's all over the place. But in terms of sequence, Braja Lila comes at the end of the book. So there is a preparation. Gaur Lila, Mahaprabhu is relishing Radha Bhava, but he does deeply and systematically his last 12 years in the Gambhira. Before that, he's instructing others to practice, following example, and teaching others through his own example. So there is a gradual sequence which shows how he goes deeper and deeper and deeper, though he's always deeper, but he's teaching us also. So many times the question is, why, from which place is coming that rush? Because many times it's like, only because I heard that's the highest thing and I should be doing the highest thing. Because if I'm not doing the highest thing, I will be bullied or excluded or whatever. I won't belong. And it all boils down to personal fractured sense of self where we feel do not belong. Many times. Again, I'm not saying every case. So there are ways to relate to Sri Radha again, as we were talking in the morning. She, in a way, how much we can relate to her, of course, again, it's his embodiment of divine love, the embodiment of the topmost form of dedication and an obsession, obsession love for Krishna. We cannot imitate that, but how can we relate, be inspired with that, and find the corresponding dose of that that we can embrace? Like, she's the personification of Srila Maharaj will say, Sarva Dharma Parityajami Kam Sharanam. Abandon everything, all sense of religion, all duties, and just surrender to Krishna. Which again, doesn't mean abandon, doesn't mean leave your wife thrown in the house and leave your kid crying, hungry. And that's not abandon, right? It means while doing everything you're doing, have your priorities in place. Of course, literally, Sri Radha abandons everything. She does it literally. She runs away from the house. She leaves everything behind, which again, we cannot do. We shouldn't do. At least at some stage in our life. Of course, at one point, even if you have been a very, I'm clarifying, if you have been a good husband, a good wife, working, taking, when you have to leave this body, you have to leave all that behind. You cannot take your job and everything to the afterlife. So there has to be at one point some release of those things that we know will not be with us for eternity, at least in certain particular form. Sooner or later, there has to come that release moment and the full embrace of the divine. So again, we may not be able to do that fully now, but what can I do today to get closer to that in a functional way? So that's a way of getting closer to Sri Radha. Again, doesn't mean run away from your home, leave your husband, although you did that coming here now to the retreat. But we trust your beautiful wife calling, everything's okay, watching your boy appearing on TV, doing all your mom dharma, it's fine. But the more we, yeah, there is a point, let's be honest. Many of those things have a time and place and circumstance, but they do not exist eternally. And sorry if now you feel that I'm speaking too much as a sannyasi now. But it's not that I'm a sannyasi, it's just that, let's be honest, not that my mom will be my mom in all the future lifetimes and my previous lifetimes. She will be my eternal mother, Yashoda, so to say. That doesn't mean I'm loving her less or nothing. It's just what it is from the picture of eternity. And sometimes we need to invoke that. So again, Sri Radha is willing to risk everything for the pleasure of Krishna. Okay, I may not be willing to do that. That's a conclusion of the Gita Maharaj. Don't go that so quickly. There are so many verses before, yeah. But the Gita has a conclusion. And we don't want to understand the text out of context and leave the book before we reach chapter 18, verse 66. No, we're feeling, oh, it's getting there, it's getting there. Let's edit the book and let's let it finish before that. No. So again, how can I embody all these attributes? I just share some words of some verse about Radha's maternal love. Or you speak about, okay, unconditionally loving Radha, how to relate to that? Well, relate in the other way around. She's loving you unconditionally. Start from that place. We always say that. No, you cannot force yourself to love Krishna or Radha unconditionally. If we don't know that they are already accepting us unconditionally, if they are accepting us unconditionally, probably you have experienced this, or you have are more, how to say, you find more relevant or are more accustomed to say, well, Krishna loves me unconditionally, but for some reason maybe we don't include Radha in that equation. So again, why? And again, it's not to have guilt. Maybe we've just been accustomed to hear more about Krishna, 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 Krishna. But maybe it's time now that we understand that Krishna without Radha is not Krishna also. And that every time we hear Krishna, 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 which is fine, nothing against Krishna. But actually, if in that Krishna, 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 actually, because Krishna is nobody without Radha, every time we hear Krishna, 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 it was actually Radha, Krishna, Radha, Krishna, Radha, Krishna. Because again, you cannot torn the two, tear the two apart. Tear, torn,
Yeah.
tear the two apart. So yeah, I know that someone, for example, like Srila Prabhupada, will speak more about Krishna, and there are reasons for that, even esoteric reasons, I would say. But even if you want to say he tried to make it simple, speak too much about Radha, Mahaprabhu, and Krishna, his disciples may become polytheistic. Who knows what? Let's concentrate on one person. Also, I will argue myself, not only myself, I'm supported here by Srila Siddhar Maharaj and others, by Prabhupada himself, that he had affinity for loving Krishna as a friend in Sakya Rasa. So naturally, Krishna is the main figure, so to say. But then, for example, and that's part of my upbringing only when I mean, I knew Prabhupada and Srila Siddhar Maharaj at the same time, not personally, but through their books. And Srila Siddhar Maharaj, his main emphasis will be to speak about Sri Radha and Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu and Sri Radha, mostly Mahaprabhu. Krishna also, of course, not that we are talking in one sense about the same non-dual absolute, but his emphasis were more Mahaprabhu and Radha. That was a very interesting complementary presentation because Prabhupada was more about Krishna. So it's important that gradually we learn to put all this together. As I can imagine, I don't know. Yeah. Any sincere Christian will have their struggle in trying to make sense of the Trinity. It takes time to understand that the three are one. It's like, no, the three are three. One is one and three is three. Again, we are trapped into mathematics there. No? So we can also have, as I say, like, we have our Gaudiya Trinity. The same principles of the Christian Trinity are basically what we call Sandini Sambit Ladini, which is Balaram, Krishna, and Radha. Jesus, Guru Tattva, Balaram, origin of Guru Tattva, Krishna, the Father, God, Radha, Holy Spirit, Bhakti Devi, Swarup Shakti. So we also have a Trinitarian view of the divine. But yeah, I know that for our, from the neck up, that's difficult to digest. It's like, just give me one name. Give me, make it simple, please, Maharaj. But we are talking about the infinite. So how we want it, we want it simple, but be careful not to be simplistic. Well, we are lazy we are not making the necessary effort that it takes to integrate all the things. That is not just intellectual effort. Also, we have an intellect. We have to make it sweat a little bit. But all our faculties. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami will say, Siddhanta Bali Echitta Nakara Alas. Try to contemplate in your mind the Siddhanta, the perfect conclusions, the conclusions about perfections. Conclusion again, ever evolving, but there are there's perfect revelation, always more perfect. He said, try to contemplate with all your faculties these revelations, nakara las, don't be lazy. Because he knows. Sometimes we could make it, and the laziness is not just intellectual laziness. Sometimes it's entering into prayer for gaining more deeper insight and revelation. We can be lazy about prayer. Like we were doing Lectio Divina before the, hopefully, before the meeting. Anyhow, I won't ask for public confession here. And that takes some effort and some time in contemplating a passage, thinking about it, trying to be present with it, sitting with paradox, because sometimes some of the ideas may, and trying to go beyond just our head, then entering into prayer, asking for further insight. All that takes an effort. So when Krishna Das Kaviraj says, don't be lazy, he's addressing all of that, right? Like, let's have the willingness to make the effort necessary for opening ourselves to the grace that will make things more clear. So, so yeah, there is a way to talk about Sri Radha in a way that is relatable. Risk-taking in love. And we may not be able to follow her risk-taking, but there is a corresponding dose of risk-taking that I'm being invited to embrace, all of us. Which risk I know I need to take, and why it feels a risk. No. Because sometimes we know, actually, if I do that, I may lose this. But if I lose that, actually, that's not mine. So I'm not losing it, because it was never mine to begin with. But I feel it's a risk because I think it's mine. So then I need to work. So it's a whole process of inner awareness. Krishna loves you unconditionally. Radha loves you unconditionally. There's nothing to lose, all to gain. In one sense, there is no risk. Srila Samaras will say, at the highest level, no risk, all gain. But we feel so much risk around us, so much potential to lose things, stuff, whatever. And behind that is so much misperceived sense of, this is mine, I'm in mine, I'm in mine, I'm in mine. Aham mameti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that's samsara. What samsara? Aham mameti. All this false sense of I based on a sense of mine, which creates attachment and which creates fear of risking the losing of those things that I think belong to me. And that fear paralyzes me, and I'm not willing to venture beyond my comfort zone and explore into the mystery of love. Love is the ultimate mystery. Radha is love personified, mystery personified. So again, ways to relate to Radha, Radha Dasyam. Serving Radha, empathizing with her mood. She's willing to risk. She's willing to embrace mystery. She runs every time she hears the flute in any possible direction. And again, we cannot imitate that. But what's the micro dose I can take, I need for myself today on a daily basis? I cannot answer that for you. This is an invitation for other Lectio Divina. But those will be very, in my opinion, very legal ways of relating to who Radha is, besides the technical details of the name of Veena, ankle bells, earrings, and so on. And again, hearing about her love personified, how love, what, I mean, she's love personified. So speaking about love is speaking about her, even if you don't mention her name. Trying to understand what's love, that's not so easy. That's not so easy. Once you understand what's love, as the other day I heard Jai Jagannath saying in the podcast, when, I mean, I heard he did say it a month ago, but I listened recently, say, once you actually grasp what love actually is, there's no return from that. If that hasn't happened yet, probably it means that we don't have yet the full grasp of what's love. And it's okay, again, not to, for anyone to feel bad, but just to not take love for granted. So trying to really understand what's love, what's the implications of love, what's the price of love, what's the dignity of love, what's the dignifying power and invitation of love. The more we get a glimpse of that, we realize there's nothing else that basically has value. And everything has value if connected with that. And I start to align my life in gradually according to that new ethic. No, whatever I do, I want it to be aligned with what love actually is. Because if not, it's just self-deception after self-deception. And I don't want to live such a tragic life of betraying myself and betraying others in the name of love. No, please. Please, God. So all of that is a way of getting more acquainted with who Radha is, even if we are not using her name. And that's part of the message of the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam doesn't need to invoke Radha's name. But it's all the time talking about her because it's all the time talking about love. Right? Sometimes the votes is funny because sometimes I've seen a post some time ago, someone say, oh, this devotee is not bona fide because look, this class he gave, he talked for 20 minutes. And he never, he in the 20 minutes, he only mentioned Srila Prabhupada or Krishna consciousness 3 times. And it's like, that's ridiculous. That's so childish. With all respect, but I mean, so what does it mean? I have to like to script my, pre-script my lecture and which is the legal amount of times that I have to say the name. So I'm bona fide, 108, okay. So every 10 words I have to say Krishna consciousness, and now that's approved. Come on. So Srimad Bhagavatam is not bona fide because it never mentions the name of Radha, not even once. Who would dare to say that? Nobody. So again, that's the indirect way to understand Radha and understand love. And the Bhagavatam is all about Sri Radha. Imagine I tell you that. Okay, I have a book here. This book, I mean, not this, it's just hypothetical. I have this book, and this book is all about one particular character whose name is not mentioned even once in the book. They're like, what? How can a whole book revolve? And on top of that, it's 18,000 verses. So it's not, it's like this, the book. So it's all revolving around this particular person who is not mentioned even once in the whole book. It's like for most people, it's like that's absurd. No, it's all the way, all the moment talking about that person without the need to referring to the person by name. Because not to downplay the name, but it's not just a matter of, okay, say the name and you are legal, but understand what's behind the name, who is the person, that is not different from the name, but there are so many qualities and attributes. So that's what the Bhagavatam does. It's like an exploration into the landscape of the possibility of divine love. I'm saying rather indirectly, here and there, starting from the title, as I always say, Srimad Bhagavatam. So right there, the very first three letters from the book is Radha's name, Sri. Sri Mad. Mad means madness. In Sanskrit, I'm not making a play of word in English. But in English, mad means mad. No, Sri Mad. In Sanskrit, Mada is madness. So Sri Mad means the madness of Sri Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam means in relation to Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam means the madness of Sri Radha in relation to Bhagavan Sri Krishna. So if you have the eyes to see, the very three first three letters already reveal what the whole thing is about. But again, you then go through the book and it's like, it's never mentioned directly. It's never mentioned directly. Why? Because love likes indirect speech. Krishna says, Paroksham Mama Chapriyam. I like when things are said indirectly. That's more tasteful. If I tell you I love you, that's kind of boring, Krishna says. It's better that we don't say that and we express that in so many ways. That's that. This is the rasa, the consideration in terms of rasa. In our tradition, the aesthetic sensibilities, the rasa shastra will say, those who say I love you do not have love. Again, I'm not here to cancel you telling I love you to your partner, son, whatever. But they try to get the idea of it. I mean, it's not about saying I love you, love you, love you. If I tell you I love you three times in a row, you start to suspect why you're telling me I love you so many times. No, I want to see you embody that stuff. So the Bhagavatam again is not saying the name of Radha. But it's all about Radha, it's all about bhakti, all about love. So again, these are creative ways and legal ways to connect with the principle of the goddess, Srimati Radharani. Of course, also we can invoke her name, we can go into the books that describe her, the leelas, the nature of her love. But talking about love is talking about her, even without talking about her directly. Sorry, went a little long.
Wonderful.
Not no, that's it. Is that
it's wonderful.
Hell. Oh.
Can I just ask a quick question on the tail of that one?
Yeah.
I just need to check on this. Could it also be that she's not mentioned directly in the Bhagavatam in a way so that the cheapness doesn't happen because she is the highest?
Mm-hmm.
Then kind of as a protection, so you have to get to know her before you would be able to take her cheaply.
Yeah, the method will be something like, because the Bhagavatam is speaking about, I don't know, this particular gopi, like the famous verse of the Bhagavatam, there's one famous verse in the 10th canto, Rasa Lila, where it says, okay, here's the name of Radha mentioned indirectly, Anaya Radito Nunyam Bhagavan Haririshvara, etc., which is when Krishna disappears from Rasa Lila and the gopis start to look for him, they at one point find two pairs of footprints. And they say, oh, there's here one gopi who has worshipped him specially. Anaya Aradito Nuna. Aradito means, Radha comes from the word Aradhana, which means to worship. So many acharyas say, okay, she's mentioned indirectly. So my point is that the whole Bhagavatam speaks about love in a way, indirectly, without mentioning her, but in such a way that the ones who are properly reading the book at one point will reach the conclusion there has to be a Radha. I mean, without maybe mentioning her name, but there's like a theological necessity, like worries. Similar to Mahaprabhu with Krishna Lila. Now, if you study Krishna Lila properly and you reach what Krishna, that's how the Goswamis found Mahaprabhu in the Bhagavatam, which other sampradayas won't read the Bhagavatam in that way. But when, for to give you an example, no, we, it's all connected. At the height of the Rasa Lila, no, the gopis are dying. If we were speaking about Rasa Lila, right? Celebration, Krishna disappears with Radha, gopis looking for him, find these two pairs of footprints, eventually finding Radha, but Krishna is not there. So the gopis joining Radha, Gopi Gita happens, Jayati Tedikam Janmana Braja, the whole Gopi Gita, Kirtan in separation. And Krishna is looking behind the tamal tree, witnessing how the hearts of the gopis are blossoming, dying in the agony of separation from him. Krishna returns with some cloth around his neck, which is something that that's how a criminal appears in court at the time. So he appears among the gopis like this, like acknowledging, I'm a criminal. The dignity of your love is such that in comparison to that, I'm like... And then he pronounces this famous word, Napariham Nidavadhyasanjajan Sasadu Krityam Vibhudayusapiva Jamavajandur Jaragiha Shrinkala Sambrishchitat Vapratiyatu Sadhana. Krishna is saying, I cannot repay back your love. I say that in the Gita 4:11, Yayatmam Prabhadante, but sorry, I'm contradicting myself. Krishna says, I'm contradicting myself. In the face of the glory of your love, I cannot pay you back. Your love is its own reward. May your love be its own reward. And that's basically what the verse says. Now, Sanatana Goswami reads that verse, and with the, of course, proper heart and proper sensibility, he realizes Krishna is so grateful and so loving, the whole thing cannot end here. It cannot just, he's not just, he will say, okay, I cannot repay back your love. May your love be its own reward. Good night. A pleasure to meet you. Let's resume Rasa Lila. No, Sanatana Goswami said, that's not possible. He has to try to repay us. Even if he cannot, he will try because of his grateful nature. Now remember, a few sections before, the Brahma Stuti, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying, Krishna feels grateful for the service that we can offer to him. He feels grateful in advance for the service that we may be able to offer to him in the future. Doesn't make sense. Oh. Krishna is not good at math. Imagine, I feel grateful for all the things that you will offer to me in the future. You never offer them. Maybe you don't have a clue if we will offer them or not. But Krishna is already grateful for the potentiality of your offering. So such a grateful person. And now he's in front of the gopis and Sri Radha in particular, the highest expression of love. And he's just saying, oh yeah, I cannot repay back. Thank you. Pleasure to meet you. No, no. Sanatana says he has to do something about it. And then Gaur Lila becomes a necessity. There has to be a Mahaprabhu. There has to be Krishna trying to experience Radha's heart, trying to repay back, becoming the devotee, spreading the message, making servants for her. It has to be that way. So the Bhagavatam is not saying Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu anything directly, but the Goswamis will read the book in that way because they understand. It's not directly stated, but indirectly takes you to that conclusion. So in the same way, the Bhagavatam is not talking about Radha directly, but if you listen and read attentively, you will reach that conclusion. There has to be such a person that eventually we discover is called Radha. But if you read the Bhagavatam, you realize there has to be that ultimate embodiment of love that the whole book is pointing to indirectly without a name, and you will become consumed and desperate. Who is that name? Who is that person? And that will create an insight in your heart when Sri Radha will manifest in between the lines of the Bhagavatam, where she isn't mentioned. And that's how the Goswamis read the Bhagavatam and commented on the Bhagavatam. And that's why many verses in the Bhagavatam, the Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, they are commenting and rewrite. And this verse actually speaks about Radharani. And they explain the Sanskrit in a way that actually makes sense for it to be speaking about her. So, but it's not just, okay, they're very expert Sanskritists, so they can twist the original to make it fit. No, they have a heart filled with proper emotion that makes her reveal for the text, which is not the same. And there are genius Sanskritists, of course, as well. That's a supportive tool to their Bhava. So yeah, that's I will say the methodology of the Bhava. You know, it talks about love in a way that is safeguarding the nobility of love. If you don't have the eyes to see, you cannot enter there and abuse that reality. But when you are properly situated, then you can access to that invisible in between the lines narrative of the Bhagavad. And that's what, I don't know, someone like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur does. His commentary on the Bhagavad, and he, in between verses, he fills in with so many in between commentaries that you're like, where is that in the Bhagavad? That's not in the Bhagavad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's in his Bhagavad. In his reading of the Bhagavad, he's seeing all that is happening between verse 13 and 14. There are like 15 more verses that he's including his commentary back and forth between whomever is talking at that time in the Bhagavatam. But that shows that, okay, there are levels of reading the Bhagavatam. And all that is Bhagavatam. Again, Bhagavatam is not the book. Today I read something very interesting. I'd like to share it with you. Why not? I received a newsletter that Krishna Kshetramara sends. And he includes something that Prabhupada said recently. I was planning to share that tomorrow, but I will share it tomorrow again. So he's having a conversation with a lady in Los Angeles, 1969. And she's asking about, how to say in English, Joan of Arc. This French.
Joan.
Joan of Arc. Okay. Juana de Arco in Spanish. This is a French Christian who eventually was canonized as a saint, basically. So this woman asked Prabhupada, are you familiar with Joan of Arc? She was a saint. And Prabhupada says, yes. The woman says, is there any person in the Srimad Bhagavatam similar to her? Prabhupada says, you want to see Joan of Arc in Srimad Bhagavatam? Why don't you take Joan of Arc off Srimad Bhagavatam? Any activities of devotees, that is Srimad Bhagavatam. What do you mean by Bhagavatam? Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam. This word comes from Bhagavan. The word is Bhagavata. Any pertaining to Bhagavat is Bhagavat. So Bhagavat can be expanded to any unlimited. So anything in relationship with God, that is Bhagavatam. So if Joan of Arc, she was in relationship with God, she's also Bhagavatam. You should expand Bhagavatam in that way. Yes. That's how we turn it completely. So there you have it. Because again, we many times have a stream about an SD, starts in this verse, finishes this. I have the whole collection in my book, Shilvat Home. That's not the Bhagavatam. Only that is not the Bhagavatam. It has to include John of Arc also. And so much more that happens in between. And yeah, that's why Prabhupada, even in his own Bhagavata, because that's also some funny thing that sometimes they will say, we should only read Srila Prabhupada's commentary on the Bhagavata. Okay, you do that. And if you do that, you will end up in other commentaries, because in the purport to verse 111, just in case, of the Bhagavata, he starts to praise all the commentaries of the Bhagavata by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Jiva, Sanatan Goswami. Any serious student of the Bhagavata will study these commentaries. And you go there, and again, you find all this expanded version of the Bhagavatam, in between, filling in verses, things said in between the lines, explanations of things that... So, yeah. That's why Sadhu Sangha is also so important, and that's why Shastra is pointing to something, but we many times need seers of truth to give us a more tangible experience of that. Srila Siddhartha Maharaj will quote Ramakrishna in this sense, and Ramakrishna will give the example, like, you can buy the newspaper and go to the weather section of the newspaper, and the newspaper will say, like today, no, we get the newspaper today from this area, today rain, right? But if you take the newspaper, right, Sorry to me first. I just squeeze the newspaper. Huh? Because it says it's raining. Water won't come up from the newspaper. Right? So the newspaper is giving you a, it's pointing to something, but to for you to have an experience of the rain, you have to go outside of the house and get wet yourself. So in the same way, the scriptures, of course, are giving something, are pointing to something, but for us to have an experience of that, generally we need to be exposed to living embodiments of that message. The message itself is a living embodiment, but many times we don't have the capacity to draw certain things out from scripture too, as we cannot get the water from the newspaper. So that's what Sadhu Sangha is so important for all of us. Swatavara, as Rupa Goswami will say, we were discussing yesterday, right? Whether associating with someone who is more advanced than us, and whether this in person or like again studying commentaries like the one we mentioned, or also associating among peers or equals, if we are honest, sincere, and vulnerable, a higher current will descend through all of us. So that's another way of speaking about defining Swatavara. Anyhow, we can go on and on. Yes.
Okay. Excuse me, Maharaj. We'll have to go. We have to put a little girl to bed.
Yeah.
Okay, but do we see you tomorrow?
Yes, I'll see you in the morning.
Okay, okay.
Very, very nice birthday. Thank you.
Thank you. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Nonetheless.
Got a few hours left. Yeah.
Yeah, please. Take rest. See you tomorrow. Greetings to Lux. Brother Priya, please.
Related to that, though, because you mentioned that Srila Prabhupada didn't speak so much about Radharani, but my...
Overtly, right? Like, yeah. Directly.
Yeah. And my experience was that Srila Prabhupada did introduce us to Radharani in exactly the same way as the Shastras, the texts which describe her pastimes in great detail, but he gave us the set, this is my relationship. As a young girl, I Prabhupada introduced me to the essence of Radhika. He said we should approach through her. Mm-hmm. He said she is so merciful. If we approach her, then she will draw attention. She'll say, Krishna, here is a very sincere soul.
Mm-hmm.
So he was actually asking us to go through Radhika. And also he translated the 10th canto ahead of the other cantos, knowing he had a short time. So, because I've been approached in various, you know, you have to rustic and, you know, but I've always feel actually Prabhupada did in that kind of way, like introduce us to Radharani's mood as the most sacred, the most top, but in a very careful way, because also he was very, very careful with us to avoid imitation sahaja. He mentioned that a lot, you know.
The Gopi, what was the Gopi Club or something?
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Often, because we, because of this.
Yeah.
All of that. So I feel, you know, that, and also like the more subtle, hidden nature of her keeps her sanctity, you know. Like what you've been speaking, I feel that's how I felt her through Prabhupada.
Yeah, thank you. And then hopefully what I said, I never meant anything different from what you said. And when I said Prabhupada didn't talk about Sri Radha so much, it was never in any way like diminishing or saying he didn't give the real thing or the false thing. But there was, again, there was a circumstance, there was a, and it's not that he didn't talk at all, as you say, it was in a very careful way, like many of our acharyas have done. So I remember always Bhakti Siddhanta, sorry?
I'm referencing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, exactly. And again, I'm referring his disciples to Srila Siddhar Maharaj, that he knew, which was his way of talking about Sri Radha and Mahaprabhu. So it's not that he didn't know or he was against that. So it's all a complementary, beautiful contribution from each one from their place. And of course, yeah, I personally really like this notion. Though I know it can be abused, Pujalaraga Patagoda Babangi. We'll talk about this, those who will be in Kolkata with us in a few weeks. This line of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, like, we worship the raga, the path of rag, the path of passionate love, the Vrindavan. We worship it from a respectful distance. So the path of love in Vrindavan is not worship off from a respectful distance, but we worship that path from some distance, not to misconstrue it and take it cheaply and gain proper qualification, not from a earning, deserving mode, but still there, by grace, there has to be a qualification. And someone like Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say, right, like 80, I will say, what's the number here? Like 85%, 90% of what I talk is what Krishna consciousness is not. Right? So that was kind of his way of, and again, it's not that he didn't know how to talk about what Krishna consciousness was. As this famous instance, just to conclude here, because Karuneshwari raised her hand an hour and a half ago. But when someone asked Srila Siddhar Maharaj, told this, also he was present there, and Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta was sitting, giving a lecture, and someone asked, can you talk about Sri Radha? Right. Can you say something about Sri Radha? So Srila Siddhar Maharaj said that he saw that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur became, just by hearing the name of his, her mistress, he started to become very moved, very ecstatic, and so much came to him to say about her. But at the same time, it was a public, like, lecture where it was not really the place to explode as he was about to explode. So he tried, like, to contain all that volcanic ecstasy that was coming, but at the same time that was coming. So it was like this tension, this struggle of so much to say, but I cannot say it here. So, and Srila Siddhar Maharaj was contemplating his guru, like, in that state. And at one point he said that the intensity was such that he fainted. No. He fell from the chair and fainted for a moment. He didn't say anything about Sri Radha. In one sense, for those who have ears, eyes to see, he said a lot without resorting to words, right? So that was his, how to say, his way of honoring this sacred principle, right? Like, we don't want to talk about it in a way that is cheap. We want to make it clear what do we need to cultivate in order to properly honor that reality ourselves. It's not like, let all that high stuff come down and adapt to me, and that's it. Oh, that's exploitation, basically. That's taking me as a point of reference for everything. And we want gradually to decentralize our false self and trying to acknowledge the real center and adjust to serve that. So. And yeah, that story came to my mind, like a proper intensive example of it. Speaking about Sri Radha, we'll ask Karuneshwari. That's my name of Radha, Karuneshwari.
I was going to say, it might be better to keep my question for another night, because it'd be more clear if I read a bit from your book, and I can't remember where it is right now.
Okay.
But there's some other hands up, so we could find it tomorrow in daylight.
That's fine. Yeah, and we're almost approaching 8 p.m. here, and I don't want it to make it, not want to go beyond 8. So since today's sharing, was kind of revolving around one single topic, quote unquote. Maybe we can keep it thematic, you say in English? No? Revolving around that, and which again is related to, of course, still related to evolution and divine love. There is a whole section about Sri Radha, so without having intention, probably, but we ended up exploring her, the nature of love. Okay. Something else, we have a few more minutes in connection to what we have been sharing so far, so we don't go out of the topic. Yes, Ravinder.
I just have a thought that was, I mean, it's a thought that's been there like over quite a few years now, but I wonder about the idea that, you know, the educating and the chastising of the sadhaka jiva, that's Radha.
I don't understand.
Okay. Radha is
the educating Radha and chastising
of the sadhaka jiva. So all of us who approach the path of devotion,
yeah,
that energy that comes through as with teaching, with remembering, or as a chastising, that's Radha.
I don't understand.
Okay.
Just sorry.
No,
I'm not saying you are not clear. I'm. I don't know if.
No, I'll just keep it and see where it goes.
Okay.
In my own life.
Sorry for my lack of. I spoke so much about indirect speech, and now Ravindra's become influenced by that, probably, and I'm not able to follow. Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to explore more of that. We can talk these days if you.
Yeah.
I mean, I like to understand. It's frustrating to me when I cannot understand the question. a little bit more elaboration. So I can sleep at peace tonight.
That's the Divine Mother.
She's the Divine Mother.
As a love for Krishna, who is like the master of all mysteries.
Yeah.
Krishna's out there.
Yeah.
But Radha is the one who's bringing us there. So it's when that mystical kind of like, you know, as practicing devotees, when we experience, you know, that, you know, chastisement that goes along with learning from the guru, everything,
mm-hmm.
that's Radharani. That's this Radharani coming in with her love for us.
Okay.
At that level.
Okay. Now I can sleep at peace tonight. Yeah, I knew we were close, but I needed a little bit more of elaboration, so thank you.
Okay. Yeah,
I'll say a few words. It's a topic worthy of exploration long time. Thank you for the question. Especially, yeah, when we speak about chastisement, and I know that I don't want anyone to get triggered hearing that word. It's mercy. But there is place for that. There is place for, chastisement, especially if we did something that deserves chastisement, so to say. But in the context of love, again, it's very, very delicate. Like, I remember, to give you an example, how it works in a functional way, I will say. I remember when we were doing the podcast with Siddhartha Krishna, you may recall him. If not, I recall him. And he was born in Switzerland, but spent his childhood in India. His father was his father. His father was his guru eventually. They walked through the Himalayas. It's very like lore from the Vedic time. Vedic, yeah. So, and he will tell me that, yeah, he as a child sometimes will do mischief. Right? I mean, Yashoda chastises Krishna. Don't forget that one, right? There is place for chastisement. So his father will chastise him. And for example, will say, okay, you did this, whatever he did as a child or as a teenager. So you have to fast till midday. And again, I know that for some of us, Western sensibilities, like, that's horrendous. How you can put your teenage boy to starve. But again, it's another culture, another time. And the father will fast along with him. and even more, right? Or he will say, okay, you have to enter the Ganga, cold Ganga, up to the neck for 10 minutes. And his father will be there an hour. Now, again, it may not be the packaging we are accustomed on this side, but try to get my principle, right? So still there is a chastisement, but there is a point of reference undergoing the same thing even more to accompany us in that moment. It's not like we are thrown and isolated in the land of chastisement and the other person is having a royal feast while I'm freezing in the Ganga. And the other person is there with me. So it's like, okay, go under that. And I'm here doing it even more than you.
So he's showing by example.
Basically, yeah. So there's something else. It's not just chastisement there. There's example, there's love, there is concern. It's an example, of course, of how Srila Siddhamaraj will also use the word chastisement as, so again, taking in consideration that ideally that's happening in the context of love. Again, we have dysfunctional scenarios where chastisement is used as an excuse to justify the unjustifiable. We're not talking about that here. Srila Siddhamaraj will say, oh, Gurudev has chastised me. He mentions that example. That means, and he says, oh, that means that he cares enough for me, that I exist for him. Now, indifference will be even worse. You follow? Again, chastisement in the context of love, right? Because sometimes we don't find chastisement, we find indifference many times. Unfortunately, in guru to disciple, when there's no need for that. So that's another way of understanding chastisement and as a special care. Again, as long as it comes with love, and as we say many times, we talked about that in Glastonbury a few days ago, that someone brought the topic of tough love. Tough?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we're just like, that's tough love. Okay, I'm not against that. Of course, it's a fine line, and we can end up justifying anything in the name of tough love. But if I as a mother, father, teacher, show tough love to you as my son, student, whatever, I chastise you, tough love, and for whatever reason you don't pass the test, so to say, you don't get that, you become discouraged, confused, sad, no? Misunderstanding that I'm rejecting you or whatever, if it's really tough love, I will recalibrate GPS, calculating, and readjust to accompany you on your journeys. Yes. It's not like tough love, you didn't pass the test, oh, you are an outcast, sorry. You failed the test, get out of here. Because sometimes that happens in the name of tough love. That's not tough love, that's tough something else.
Tough luck.
Right. But if the word love is there, it has to be loving. It has to be loving. So, in that context, we can think of Radha. We hear some of the Leelas where she, of course, she chastises Krishna a lot. That's a whole area of conversation. She chastises Krishna. She abuses Krishna verbally a lot. But it's all for Krishna's, for the sake of Krishna's pleasure. She knows Krishna's enjoying that so badly. So, but it takes the form of chastisement. But it's in Krishna's service. So it's very different. Or sometimes she may chastise some of his, in the Radha Rasa Sudhaniya I just read, there are some verses which describe how Radha chastises some of her manjaris, her servants, where they do something, some service, not in the best possible way they could do, but the context of that is she very lovingly, quickly, she's there to teach them how to do it properly. There are so many stories about that, right? So it never ends in chastisement. So to say, it's not the chastisement is the end of the story or the final word. It's just one thing happening in the context of so many other things happening. No. There's love in between, love to begin, chastisement in between, love to conclude, so to say. That's the sandwich. So yeah, we can, if you want to think, okay, Radha is chastising me through Guru. There is place for all of that, as long as we have the proper understanding of what we are talking about when we say chastisement, tough love, whatever.
Yeah, but I think it's like in the same way as you said, Radha's chastising Krishna. Krishna with love. Could it not be like she's chastising the sadhaka jivas with love? Because it's Radha, that's her name.
Yeah, of course. Again, she's love personified, so she cannot not love. Whatever it is, but it's love. Again,
yeah,
it's love, and for us, the important stance for us will be, if I really want love, as long as there is love in there, I want it. Even if it's at times it will be tough. But if it's love, really love, I will take it because that's what I need. And on the contrary, I don't want something that is not tough, but it's not love either. Follow my point?
Yeah,
it may seem loving, but it's just feeding victim mentality and it's spoiling me. I don't want that. No. If it's not coming from a genuine place of loving care. And if it comes from a place of loving care, it can take whatever shape it needs to take. That's kind of about the ideal spirit of the sadhaka, no? The ideal willingness to surrender. I want love. I only want love, whatever it takes, whatever form it takes. I will trust that love will come to my life in the corresponding shape that I need to receive in this precise moment. And I want to take it. I want to embrace it. I don't want to be very picky about the packaging. Right. I don't want tough love any, and I only want like this ultra sweet, caressing, embracing. Like that will come all, but sometimes love takes different shapes again. But again, as long as it's love, that should be our faith or our surrender. As long as it's love, I'm thirsty for that. But it may take this form as long as it's love again. Yeah, that's the spirit of Radha, again, connecting to her. She will say, as long as Krishna is happy, I'm willing to do anything and everything. She's happy embracing me. He's happy embracing me. I'm all in for embracing him. But if I start to feel this slightest displeasure in him embracing me, I want to get rid of that embrace. Not because of the embrace, but because I want his happiness. And if I came to know that he will be more happy with some other gopi, I will not doubt for a moment becoming a housemaid at her house and making all the possible arrangements to bring her to Krishna. That's the explanation of the 8th verse of Sikshastakam, Krishna Kaviraj Goswami says. So that's her willingness, her disposition. As long as it's love from her side, as long as I'm loving Krishna, I'm existing for his happiness, I'm open to do whatever it takes. Again, that's our ideal of love. We may still feel, oh, I'm falling short from them. Relax, relax, you are not Radha. But that's our deity, no? Love. So it's good to keep the deity in place so everything else gradually falls into that context. And we do not cheat ourselves. And if I fall short of that, then I can acknowledge that for what it was. I fell short of that. I don't try to justify that in another way and make myself the victim and start to blame the environment and blah, blah, blah. No. There is the ideal. There is the falling short of the ideal. It's part of the journey. But at least you are falling short in the context of such an ideal. So that's still glorious. But because falling short of the ideal means you are still attempting. You're just missing the mark. But you have the mark. You have the proper aim, and that you are failing is, but you have the proper mark. Some other people are shooting at other aims. Now we are trying to, okay, I want the love aim, the love target. I may fail miserably for lifetimes, but the target is in place. So that's it. That's glorious. There's no coming back from that. Even the failing, falling short of the proper target is in itself glorious. Right? That's what Krishna says. That's apichet sudra acharo bhajante mamananyavaka. Bhagavad Gita 9:30. Even if you still behave very badly, but you are determined in worshipping me alone, in my eyes, you are a sadhu already. That's basically the same idea. You have decided upon this is the aim, love is my target. Even if you fall short of that, you throw the arrow, who knows, but you know that's the aim. In my eyes, you're already a sadhu, Krishna. It's just a matter of time that you gain some more accuracy in the arrow shooting. We are training. We are training our arrow shooting. at sadhana. Can do some Ramachandra puja. He's good at arrow shooting. Maybe we get some. One of the.
You like the GPS also. The GPS is recalculating, helping us recalculate our aim.
Yeah. And still we may take the wrong turn, but recalculate again. Yeah. Okay. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki Sri Radha Thakurani ki Sri Krishna Chandra ju ki Hari Naam Sankirtan ki Sadhu Sangha ki Gaur Premanand Hari Vansha Kalpataru Vishnagri Prasnudu Bhe Vacham Sitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo